I've been smoking cigarettes since my very first rodeo. Cigarettes made me into the proud Bitcoin-only cowboy I am today. The only downside of smoking cigarettes every day is entropy of your taste buds. That's why I get my spicy beef jerky from Barn Jerky. How spicy is it? Barn Jerky's grass-fed smoked beef jerky, made with organic cayenne pepper sourced from the volcanic craters of El Salvador, is hotter than Lynn Alden.
That's hot.
So head over to barnjerky.hashrootsinc.io today for all your spicy beef jerky needs. You can also purchase Bitcoin podcast-themed Zippos, flasks, drink coasters, and cypherpunk stickers with lightning powered by BTC Pay Server.
Welcome back to the Bugle Weekly. We hope you had a lovely Christmas with the family and that it was truly a magical experience. Now that Christmas season is officially over, it means that we are entering into tax season, which is why you are here. You listen to Bitcoin podcasts in order to gain the knowledge needed, in order to make the right financial decisions so you have the ability to afford to pay your taxes. Satoshi Nakamoto created Bitcoin in order to have a roundabout way for individuals to finally to be able to afford their taxes. This created an entire movement consisting of countless podcasts, conferences, and influencers promoting tax-affording technology. In this movement, there is one podcast that stands out from the rest. You are listening to it now, so sit back, light a cigarette, and get ready for an hour of the most thermodynamically sound, pure signal you can find. You are listening to the Bugle Weekly.
Merry Christmas from the Bugle, the number one Bitcoin bull market podcast. Wow, we had a great Christmas. I don't know about you, but I was at home with my family, reflecting on the year, being thankful, spending the holidays low-key, and realizing that Bitcoin's had an incredible year. People who've been stacking sats, stacking the ETF, have really, really, really had a year to be thankful for. And I think it's just going to be like the year of the taxpayer. So many more taxpayers, thanks to Bitcoin. People are going to be paying their taxes for the first time. They're thankful that they're becoming tax-paying citizens. I just think that that's pretty cool. How was your Christmas, Richard?
Oh, it was wonderful. Had a beautiful time with the family, smoking cigarettes, smoking Bitcoin, or listening to Bitcoin podcasts. My wife got me some typewriter cleaning utensils or tools, and those are pretty nifty. So I've just been hanging out, cleaning the typewriter, did a Christmas special, which I've gotten some nice feedback on, and it was just a lovely day, as usual. How was yours?
It was great. Yeah. You know, to this day, my mom still smokes cigarettes in the house. So it's great to go home for Christmas, just be able to sit and watch your favorite Christmas movies. And you don't even have to, you know, step outside to smoke a cigarette. You could just be together as a family, uninterrupted, and smoke a cigarette. And that's my favorite part about going home for Christmas. And one of the movies that we watched
I can't believe that people smoke outside. It's too cold in the winter to smoke outside.
Finally, yeah, my family lives in upstate Maine. It's frigid up there. And you know, my mom is a very thin, she's an elderly woman. She could potentially die if she had to smoke cigarettes outside. So, you know, it's just a matter of survival. If you live in the global north.
Yeah. I mean, these people with their smoking restrictions can legitimately cause physical harm to people by expecting them to smoke outside. Absolutely insane. There's nothing worse than a landlord that puts you can't smoke inside on the rent, or that's an expectation, or like a family member.
How could you leave? How could you treat your mother that way to put her outside to smoke a cigarette? It's not loving. It's not accepted.
Well, these hospitals are some of the worst offenders, right? Because like, who's in hospitals? It's largely old people that really don't do well with, you know, the elements.
That is probably my biggest gripe with the fiat healthcare system. If they actually cared about patient care and people getting better, they would never send them outside to smoke cigarettes just because they are in the hospital for treatment. I mean, it's you would never see that in a healthy system. It's incredible.
Yeah.
You send them outside, they're going to get pneumonia from being outside in the winter time when they would be fine if you just let them smoke in their hospital room.
Yeah. Our society it can be cruel at times.
It really can. Bitcoin will fix this. Bitcoin will fix this. People will sometimes ask, how do I know that Bitcoin has already won? Or how will I know when hyper-Bitcoinization, what does that mean? Once you can smoke cigarettes in the hospital again, you will know that hyper-Bitcoinization is here. The incentives will finally be fixed, and the savagery will no longer take place in the public square.
Okay. I guess that is largely what this Christmas was about for my family, was celebrating the reality that Bitcoin already won. But yeah, I want to hear about your time with your family. Sorry to cut you off there.
No, yeah, we watch all the best Christmas movies, like Elf, Christmas Story. And we were watching my favorite, Home Alone and Home Alone 2. And I always enjoyed it, and I always really felt some sort of connection with that movie. So I've rewatched it many times, but I never understood the connection and why I felt that way. I never really understood the plot of the movie. And then I realized it is a story about being the only Bitcoiner in a family full of shitcoiners. And like, everybody, the shitcoiners think that they've got it all figured out and that that they have crossed off all of the marks that they have to not get rug pulled and to, never have any trade-offs. Why only Kevin? He's the only Bitcoiner. He's the only one that has to like show them how to run the house, his opinions, his outlook, his political opinions, everything, his financial advice is the best in the family. Like, that is what it's like to be a Bitcoiner in a family full of shitcoiners. And that is what a lot of people, I think, it resonates with them when they're at home with their families this year.
I mean, that's such a good example. If you look at the family in Home Alone, I mean, what's more fiat than going to France for Christmas? I can't think of anything more fiat than being in Paris for Christmas. You know what I mean? As an American.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and not only that, they go to France, they fly first class, they have a huge, this guy, somebody did apparently, didn't tell the dad that real estate's a shitcoin because he has a pretty expensive house, right? Like, he's just, all of his decisions made me realize this person is not stacking sats at the optimal level. Their DCA could be much higher.
Yeah. If they were stacking sats, they would have flown the kids in first class too.
Exactly. And they would have been smoking on the plane.
Yeah.
Watching it, how would you describe Haley and Marv, the guys that are trying to break in? Is basically Kevin is putting on a master display of OPSEC, of security, of personal privacy and security. And all. So yeah, he covers all of it, right? Like he makes, you know, it's just a massive display, masterful display. So yeah. Would you say that, Harry and Marv are the state or, hackers? Like, how would you describe them? What do they represent?
I think they represent a few different entities. So they represent scammers that are trying to like fish for your Bitcoin. The ones that are sending you emails about like trying to get you to upload your seed phrase into a internet browser. Then they're scammers wherever they're at doing that, Russia or.
Yeah, including scammer influencers who remember, like, you know, Harry is trying to tell the feds, he's trying to tell everybody that they are the wet bandits. He's trying to leave his impact and be like a top influencer in the cat burglary game.
Yep.
That is what scammers do. That's how they try to impact the narrative.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Lazarus Group, North Koreans. Like, they're always bragging about how big their Bitcoin stack is.
Right.
Then they kind of represent groups like Mossad, I think. So, like, you know, there's a lot of fears right now that they've infiltrated the supply chains and are making hardware wallets explode, essentially. Hopefully taking out the seed phrase, because they're assuming people store it on paper next to their hardware wallets. And and only the other people that are trying to come after your Bitcoin, essentially.
And it also, you know, it also represents, I would say, I lost my train of thought on the original one, but the second one is that you could have every trade-off, every risk vector, every weakness in your security setup. You know, you could think you have it all. You've thought of it all. Every window has Christmas ornaments underneath it. Every handle, you know, is either, you know, it's got the heat thing, so they'll burn their hand when they touch it, or it's, you know, it's covered in ice, so they'll slip before they can get in. You have every single entrance covered. But if sometimes the state and the area or your adversaries, they could still compromise your stack. And that sometimes the only thing that can save you is the cops showing up at the end.
Totally.
No. You pay your taxes. Sometimes you need to use law enforcement to stop your hackers.
It's an example of how the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve fixes this, essentially, because if it's not for the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve, the government would be bankrupt, which means the cops wouldn't come save your Bitcoin stack.
Right. And part of the solution there is that if Bitcoin can fix the fiat system, the way it will fix it is by strengthening the dollar in such a way that they can continue to print money. But it's like MMT. They're using MMT, modern monetary theory. They can't use Congress to raise your taxes because people like Donald Trump are protecting you and making sure that the government can't raise your taxes, that you can always afford your taxes. That's why, you know, Donald Trump got elected. That's what Republicans do. But the central bankers are following modern monetary theory. If they can back the dollar, the government backs the dollar with Bitcoin, they can print as much money as they want and create so much inflation. As long as we can pay our taxes and your taxes keep getting raised as you do the back door of inflation, then the system can continue, because Bitcoin would fix that thermodynamic heat loss of printing money without being able to pay back your taxes.
What comes after modern monetary theory? Because at a certain point, it's no longer modern. You know what I mean?
So like progressive or postmodern monetary theory? Is that what you're thinking?
Contemporary monetary theory. Yeah, I don't know what it will be named. Maybe we could be the ones to name it. I mean, Bitcoin podcasters are the leading, you know, researchers and discussers of what's happening today economically, more so than anybody else out there. We're going to be the ones victorious writing history, so we might as well choose the name for whatever comes after modern monetary theory. I think Bitcoin dollar monetary theory.
That's a good point. Yo. Wow. The Bitcoin dollar monetary theory. But my suggestion before you said it that way was going to be, you know, modern monetary theory was invented and is made popular by a hot MIT economist named Stephanie Kelton. And I don't know if she goes to MIT, but she's hot. And what better figurehead for the postmodern monetary theory, the theory that talks about how to use hard money, than Lynn Alden? But maybe Mark Goodwin should be the face, and Winnie Webb should be the face, not Lynn Alden.
Yeah, that'd be pretty interesting.
People would be really more likely to pay attention in economics class in high school and in college if they were learning from the mind of Lynn Alden.
Why do you think Stephanie Kelton's hot? Can you explain that to me? I just don't see it.
Because she's thin and blonde. That's the only requirement I have. Tall, thin, and blonde.
I don't know.
That's why Miss Hobblebot was a catfish. She had everything except for the thin. She's tall and blonde.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I have different standards. I can't really see a woman as hot unless she's on Bitcoin podcasts talking about Bitcoin regularly. And she did go on What Bitcoin Did that one time, so I guess that lends some credibility to her being hot a little bit, I guess.
Exactly. I mean, I guess I don't know what the acronym BIMBO stands for, but that's what they talk about in the fiat world. If a girl's just hot and she doesn't understand macro or anything, or listen to Bitcoin podcasts, but there is a version of that that I think that Stephanie Kelton still kind of has a loophole.
Yeah.
But agree to disagree.
That's interesting. Well, I mean, I just don't feel strongly about it. I'm not going to go out there and like call her trans. You know what I mean? Because I don't think she's.
Right, that's true. It's not like you're going to like sling vicious attacks. But, you know, it's just like some people for the Blockstream Jade, some people for the Bitbox, some people for the Cold Card. Everybody just has their own preferences and what they think is hot.
Yeah. Well, on the topic of hot, I posted a poll and the results were kind of interesting on Twitter. I asked, would you date a Bitcoiner? And so a Bitcoin podcaster. Would you date a Bitcoin podcaster? Majority of females doubled the yeses, doubled the noes.
Very interesting.
For the males, it was 40% yes, 29% no. So there was a resounding yes. If that was a presidential selection, if the split was like that, they would call it a landslide. And so what that goes to show me is that just based on that alone, people think that being a Bitcoin podcaster is hot. And it increases your odds of finding a companion. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I don't know, maybe people can relate, but if you're a Bitcoin podcaster, I'm sure you can. One of the things that my girlfriend and I, we got into an argument about over Christmas, it's her in-laws essentially, was that I was bonding with my dad over listening to Bitcoin podcasts, which I assume a lot of people do with their fathers. I didn't think that was, there's anything wrong with that, but she told me that she just wishes that, that I showed as much interest in her as I do Bitcoin podcasts. So listening to, you know, I interviewed her the way I interview podcast, or the way a podcaster interviews. And it's easy in the bull market to constantly be distracted and checking the price for NGU and for tweets about corporations and convert and MicroStrategy buying more Bitcoin. But
yeah, I don't really have that issue. My wife, she understands the importance of Bitcoin podcast because she knows the only way I could provide for our family and, you know, supply her and our son with cigarettes is if I listen to Bitcoin podcasts. And so I think that's like, you know, one of the things we all like, there's going to be a tension in every relationship over how important Bitcoin is, because there's different people, different backgrounds, different worldviews, will place different valuations on Bitcoin. You know, like your spouse might only listen to 24 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week.
Maybe
a part-time.
What I told my girlfriend, and I think that this is a relatable problem. My girlfriend, she comes home from work, or whenever she tells stories about her day, or about her life, or about, you know, something she thinks is funny, they're just not very interesting. And what I told my wife is that, or my girlfriend, excuse me, I hope she doesn't even say wife, is that if you want me to pay attention to you as much, you know, and listen to you as intently as I listen to Bitcoin podcasts, you have to learn to tell stories and have a, you know, interesting thoughts that you would hear on a Bitcoin podcast. And so she's going to work on telling stories and being as interesting as Bitcoin podcasts.
Yeah. We're going to need marriage counselors that are literate in Bitcoin and can explain to people that listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week. So like, for example, you know, you have two people sitting in your office, they have some tension in their relationship, they're just wanting to work on it before it turns into something bigger. And, you know, they just need it broken down to them. They need to understand that relationships are like the blockchain, right? And like, sometimes you have to come to compromises on things. And, you know, like, for example, like all of our tensions are like the blockchain, or sorry, like a block, like they're limited in size. And so you have to prioritize certain things into each block. And like, you know, if your spouse, for example, is really not good at memes, and they want to spend a lot of time showing you your bad memes, so it's the poor use of block space, essentially.
And right. So, exactly. Then she needs to, you need to learn to consolidate your UTXOs. If you want to be able to affordably transact adversarially peer-to-peer on-chain, even in high-fee environments, it's a matter of efficiency. Yep. My girlfriend needs to be more efficient in the way she communicates, and she needs to consolidate her highlights of her day and kind of just give me the signal and the value of what she's trying to tell me, instead of just, you know, scatter UTXO, scatter fucking points. She just needs to be more efficient in her communication. And a Bitcoin therapist would notice that right away. So one of the things people talk about constantly, especially in Hollywood, is age gaps, the age gap between, you know, like Bill Belichick, the former Super Bowl head coach in the NFL, he's like 70 years old and he's recently got engaged to a 22-year-old TikTok influencer. And that's the, you know, an age gap that people talk about as being a potential problem. But there's also a gap that very few people talk about, which is a time preference gap. If you listened to 20,000 hours of Bitcoin podcast, but your wife or your girlfriend's only listened to 40 hours or 0 hours of Bitcoin podcast, that time preference gap is going to cause potential problems in your relationships. And you have to keep that in mind. Sometimes it's exciting. If you meet a girl who is excited to listen to the Bitcoin podcast that you show her, and she's just will listen to anything you say, and you can orange pill her so easily. But that's a red flag. Like, you want somebody who's more aligned with your time preference.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, time preference is a big one. You know, and there's a lot of decisions that, you know, people need to understand are like hard forks or soft forks in the relationship. So, like, there's some things, you know, like, people change over time. You know what I mean? Their interests change. Sometimes their values change. Like, say, for example, so if, like, both parties in the relationship are non-religious and they decide they want to become religious, or if they are staunch Bitcoin maximalists, but then they decide they change their mind and they want to shitcoin a little bit as well, or, you know, they were staunch Bitcoin maximalists and they wanted to, you know, use Monero for something. Like, people need to understand, you know, there's a process of, like, where both parties have to communicate about the decision and make it together. You know, if you're going to shitcoin, like, it can cause conflict, you know, if one person in the relationship is eating a bunch of seed oils and the other one isn't. And if one is sunning their bones.
Yeah.
And if one's just staying inside all the time.
That is, that's a problem. I had a plant DM me. And he asked, he said, my wife wants to open our Bitcoin-only marriage to shitcoins. She thinks that by opening our Bitcoin-only marriage and inviting shitcoins, or experimenting with trading shitcoins, would allow us to acquire more Bitcoin in the short term. Like, you know, some things like Doge and these other shitcoins have a, you know, history of outperforming in the very short term Bitcoin. And she just thinks that we need to add that volatility and excitement to our portfolios and to our marriage by, you know, maybe just being secretive about it, but opening it up to shitcoins. And let me tell you, that can only go wrong. Like, once you open that up and you go off the Bitcoin standard, your marriage, you're gambling with your marriage. Do shitcoining with your wife is gambling with your marriage. Just repeat that. Mars, if you're listening, repeat after me. If you're shitcoining with your wife, you're gambling on your marriage.
Yeah, I mean, it can be argued as a pretty high time preference activity to shitcoin together,
right,
in your relationship,
right? Yeah. And, you know, but if you trust each other, you know, everybody make their own decisions. But
I think every marriage they should upload the marriage certificate signed by the minister through the blockchain as an inscription.
Some husbands, some Bitcoiner husbands, put all of their wife's allowance in Bitcoin or her sats in a 2-2 wallet. So, like, if she wants to spend Bitcoin, he has to approve it with that second signature. I mean, am I to judge that? I don't know. It works for them.
I mean, think about this. Like, so instead of exchanging rings, you could put your vows on the Bitcoin blockchain. And so instead of, like, say your wife goes out to the bar and some guy's hitting on her, instead of flashing out the ring, she could pull up the rare sat and show the guy, be like, hey, you know, this marriage
that
I'm watching.
You, yeah, that's a good point. Like, if, like a diamond ring, not all of them are created equal. So if, you know, if you're a woman and your orange pill, your Bitcoiner boyfriend proposes to you using, by, you know, inscribing the date onto the blockchain, you know, or putting your vows on the blockchain. If he uses a rare sat from two halvings ago, that is, that's going to be a big old blast in diamond versus, you know, like 2-bit zirconia, which is just like a, you know, what's the opcode way of getting like a short message into the blockchain before ordinals. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I have no idea.
People do it all the time for like their, which block their kid was born. Operator message, just a simple operator message.
Yeah, you could do that. You could. I mean, that's too simple, though. I feel like, you know, the reason why an inscription is valuable is because inscriptions are expensive, just like the ring. Like, the ring shows commitment because somebody spends potentially a third of their yearly income or whatever.
But what if a woman says, I don't want my future husband to spend all of our sats that could, you know, fund our future and pay for us to go to Bitcoin conferences, like even across the world. I would rather him all I care about is that it's on the blockchain. I just want it to be a cheap op return message. And I want to save that Bitcoin. What do you say to those women?
Hey, I would probably check, tell the guy to check if they're trans, because I'm pretty sure women don't think like that at all. Women have no problem with you spending your Bitcoin. The battle is preventing them from getting you to spend all your Bitcoin.
That is true. That, like, your wife exists as a temptation to spend Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, like, women want to feel very important. You know what I mean? And if you're a guy that listens to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week, or you have your own podcast, she's going to understand how much you understand Bitcoin. And for you to be willing to spend a fair amount on her to inscribe, you know, something, like, it's going to mean, I don't know, it probably means a lot to her.
Question. If you propose to your wife and you pay, you know, 10 Bitcoin for that rare sat, for that proposal.
Yeah.
If she breaks out, if, you know, if the wedding doesn't happen, does she have to give back the private key to that rare sat, or does she get to keep it?
Well, I mean, I think the thing that's valuable about this is it's on the blockchain either way. You can't destroy it, right? So it's not really, like, the private key doesn't really matter. What matters is the permanence that, like, you, if your wife has trouble understanding this, or your fiance, what you could tell her is that, you know, the entire world can't see your ring, but the entire world can see the blockchain. You know what I mean? So it's her ability to show the entire world how valuable, you know, her husband.
Can you imagine what if you date this girl and she's just like such a manipulator? Instead, like, sometimes girls will be like, hey, I want you to get your name tattooed, or my name tattooed on your body. Say you love me. But instead, she wants you to inscribe on a expensive rare sat. Like, you know, love her if you don't, it's like replaces the tattoo on the body. It's like a permanent, immutable tribute of love. You can never take it back. No matter how much you want to, you can never take it back.
Totally.
So, I mean, how many dudes are gonna be out there fucking on the hook with like 10 different expensive ass inscriptions because he's constantly falling for chicks who want him to spend his Bitcoin on them.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing that I think is kind of hilarious is there's an accountability piece to it. Is the entire world will see that this individual has 10 expensive inscriptions like that with 10 different ones.
How expensive of an inscription do you think it would take to marry Aubrey Strobel?
Wow. Well, that guy couldn't get her to go to Waze Slice's party with her. And those are typically pretty expensive, right? They're probably close to 1,000,000 sats at this point, which is a pretty good chunk of cigarettes. So it's got to be pretty significant. I think Aubrey appears to have pretty high standards for herself. I don't know her personally, but she knows her value in the world as far as being a woman in the PodConf ecosystem and having a Bitcoin podcast. I mean, that puts her as far as in people's beliefs on attractiveness kind of towards the top. I wouldn't call her a Lynn Alden, but a lot
do
of
you, yeah, that was my question. It's like, do you think that somebody like Aubrey Strobel has any chance, or anybody, does anybody have a chance of having as many tributes or proposals of love inscribed forever on the blockchain as Lynn Alden? I don't think anybody would have more on-chain inscriptions of people saying they wanted to marry them than Lynn Alden. Not even Aubrey Strobel.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like comparing, Michael Jordan to Allen Iverson. You know what I mean? That's like, Allen Iverson is great. I love Allen Iverson. He was one of the most fun basketball players to ever watch, but he wasn't Michael Jordan. But Lynn Alden, the scenario is like the Michael Jordan of hotness, and Aubrey's kind of like a Allen Iverson, in my opinion. Or like a Derrick Rose.
That's a good way of putting it. We kind of got off topic, but we're getting into, it's only been a couple days since Christmas. Most of us are still hanging out with our families, definitely listening to more Bitcoin podcasts than putting in hours at our job. But, what is Christmas? We had a good Christmas. What is Christmas to you? What does Christmas represent to you as a Bitcoiner? What kind of perspective does a Bitcoin maximalist have on the meaning of Christmas? And how does that compare with the fiat system or with shitcoiners? Like, what is the true meaning of Christmas?
Well, as a, credentialed journalist, my view of Christmas has evolved over time, right? So like when I was working for the CIA ran media, Christmas was all about consumerism, right? It was all about capitalism. It was all about advertising. It was the time of the year the advertisers really wanted to give you money. And so you just kind of fed into that. You know what I mean? Like it's the time for PodConf, essentially, in our little ecosystem we find ourselves in. But that's kind of changed, I don't know. I would say Christmas is about Jesus, right? I know that's a very controversial thing to say in our society where there's such a, intense war on Christmas. But I would say it's about Jesus. And I would say it's largely about budgeting too. It's about, planning ahead. It's about having low time preference because just after Christmas, you have to pay your taxes.
Right. That is why we shouldn't be, it shouldn't be a surprise or it shouldn't be a bearish indicator that the Bitcoin price is dropped below 100K over the holidays. It's not that Bitcoin, it's not that Bitcoiners shouldn't like Christmas, but it's just that people need to are paying their taxes. It should be expected. People are selling to afford taxes. And more people now than ever before are selling Bitcoin to pay their taxes.
Well, I think, you know, what the really smart Bitcoiner does, right, is they've been around a while. They've been through a few cycles. So they kind of know how things work. So, like, you can kind of arbitrage, like, Bitcoin's volatility by moving in and out a dollar. So essentially, like, you know, in a bull market, when Bitcoin's trending up, you want to hold Bitcoin. So you might be budgeting, you know, throughout the years, putting a little bit aside every month in savings to buy Christmas gifts so that you can afford Christmas and taxes at the end of the year. Right? And so those dollars that you put to work increase in value. And so you can sell your Bitcoin at the end of the year to pay for Christmas gifts and afford capital gains. But like in a bear market, you might want to move those funds as Bitcoin's trending down into USDT before you buy Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You
know?
And so what a lot of people did is they saw Bitcoin going up, they put money into it. And unfortunately, it just looks like the DCAers are not buying as much, and they're selling currently to afford those two things. And so I wonder if there's going to be another Bitcoin price dip as we get into tax season as well.
Yeah, I think that is a perfect or like a great way to time the market, especially if you're a trader or you're buying call options, is to remember that the price is going to dip around April.
Yeah.
And going back to the spirit of what is the meaning of Christmas? And to me, it comes down to two things. One is Christmas is a great way to celebrate how great capitalism is. Because you look around the world and you look at Christmas celebrations and you look at Christmas presents and you look at Christmas parties, capitalist countries have the best Christmases. Mm-hmm. Much better than communists, much better than these alternative socialist hellholes, right? Like, capitalism is where Christmas is at. And that is what it's good to remember at Christmas, is being thankful for capitalism. Yep. And second is one of the most important, however you said, Christmas evolves in meaning, and Christmas evolves in how cultures celebrate it over time as well. But one thing we can never afford to lose is the story of Santa Claus. Santa Claus teaches you at a very young age that even when you think it's implausible that all of the authorities and all the authority figures that you respect would be in collusion to pull off a cruel psyop to control your behavior, you could just look back at the story of Santa Claus and realize that that is one of the most common psyops in the world. And if they're doing it to children to get them to behave and to not get on the naughty list, they're definitely doing it to you.
Totally. What Bitcoiners would you say are on the naughty list? Do you have any short list?
Well, I think every year, Udi and the Ordinals shitcoiners are on the naughty list. I think that if you have, you know, probably most people would agree that Shinobi is on the naughty list. Whitney Webb is certainly, and Mark Goodwin are definitely on the naughty list. Who else? Do you got any more?
I would say Nick Carter's on the naughty list.
Nick Carter for sure. Again, he's been on the naughty list for the past few years. It's been reported that, exposed, I guess, that Steve Barber intentionally gets on the naughty list for Santa every year because he, he likes getting coal in his stocking. So if you know Steve, you know why, he loves dirty coal. He thinks that that's better than nuclear energy. So what about...
I think there's this like whole type of individual that's interested in the Bitcoin that tries to hold into kind of being a bad boy and like thinks that women will find it attractive if you're on the naughty list. You know what I mean? And that's kind of like Steve's brand of Bitcoin influencing, essentially, is like he's going to be the guy that's like a little bit edgy, like he's against ESG, which is essentially bad for NGU. Like he's saying a bunch of things that contradict Dennis Porter, which is very dangerous. And I kind of wonder if it's like, you know, attempt to impress his wife or something. You know what I mean? Like kind of right. Old guy that rides the Harley to the bar and rides his
wife. I never met Steve Barber, so this might be totally inaccurate, but I just noticed that people who are really lean into being anti-environment, instead of just being like ESG and climate change are psyops, it's like, I think they're good, and using it as a psyop, say it's good, trying to spin the psyop, right? And like leaning into like, I hate the climate. I don't think women should vote, fuck the government, you know, all this stuff. They're usually short, like Svetsky. So I don't know if maybe like Steve Barber is just feels like it, you know, he's got short man syndrome. So he is a big guy that he makes his personality about light and coal.
Well, what's funny about Steve Barber is he's probably like 6'4", 6'5". He's a tall guy.
Oh, okay.
He's actually the exact opposite of that. But I could see like how his Twitter personality could suggest that he has short man syndrome.
Interesting.
I would say Alex Svetsky's on the naughty list for sure.
Oh, yeah, especially with some of the women in Bitcoin for sure. Yeah.
Well, he's on their naughty list. That's for sure. He seemed like he was on Jin Erso's naughty list when we interviewed her.
I think he's on Ninja Granny's naughty list, but I think that Ninja Granny's naughty list is really just a list of all the boys she has crushes on in Bitcoin podcast land.
Yeah. I almost wonder, that's an interesting theory about her placing the people she has crushes on the list, but I almost wonder sometimes, yeah, it feels like some women are mad at all Bitcoin male podcasters and maybe even all men. But what's been really interesting is these women, and I'm not talking about Ninja Granny, because I think she oftentimes is rightfully frustrated with certain people, or I can at least empathize with it. But some of these women that are just vehemently anti-men for whatever reason, they seem to be in love with this Luigi guy. Have you noticed this?
Oh, yeah. The new United Healthcare fall guy?
Yeah. Okay, I think a lot of people get into socialism in general because they're looking for an alternative to the system that we're in, right? Like, there are individuals that feel marginalized. They haven't been able to afford to pay their taxes, so they get frustrated, take it out on, you know, billionaires and people providing value to the economy. And they think it's edgy, right? And Luigi is like the face of that edginess of the individual that's disenfranchised and can't afford to pay their taxes.
Yeah, it's interesting who they make their heroes. You know, it tells a lot about a person who they make their heroes in Bitcoin. And the other thing that those type of people, those Ninja Grannies, I mean, not Ninja Granny herself, but we were just talking about her, is in one of the most important things is trying to get more women into Bitcoin. And people like them, they don't really try to help the cause as much as you think they should. You know, it's like sometimes we'll say women love to spend Bitcoin, or, you know, women, you know, might not necessarily know how to use hardware wallets. And their first response is, hey, hello, not all women. And it's like, it used to be a meme, a hashtag, like not all men. It's like people, a woman would say men are, you know, doing too much raping in society. And they're like, hey, not all men. I'm a male feminist. It's like, it's kind of like the reverse in Bitcoin Twitter. It's like, not all women. I have a multi-sig wallet that I know how to use, and I run my own node. It's like, that's not helpful. I'm proud of you, but it's not helpful. What we need to do is preaching and helping more women realize they could also use a hardware wallet.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I like that meme, not all women. I think one thing people need to understand is that not all women that are smart and know a lot about Bitcoin, not all of them are actually biologically male. And it's something that seems to be lost in translation when I'm looking at Bitcoin Twitter. I see a lot of the replies to the Lynn Alden posts that we do, and not all women are biological males at birth.
And you know, don't get me wrong, I love our friend Mars, and he works so hard on his video memes. Sometimes they just don't get the recognition they deserve, but you know, he made a really good one that went viral yesterday. You haven't seen it. It's like it's Michael Saylor saying, you know, women who spend all their time on listening to Bitcoin podcasts and being on Twitter spaces, they have a word for them. He calls them feds. And that's a dog whistle for, you know, implying that, you know, women who are into Bitcoin are biologically male. Like, people associate feds with men. It's just an Andrean thing. It's a funny meme, and I think you should check it out. But it does perpetuate a problematic message.
Yeah, I mean, not all hot women are feds. I don't think Lynn Alden's a fed.
I don't either. Right, exactly.
That's a pretty crazy conspiracy theory if you think Lynn Alden's a fed.
Right, and they assume that, you know, Cynthia Lummis, she must be a fed. Caitlin Law, she must be a fed. And it's on par with the anti-Semitism that people throw at, like, who controls the banks? It's like, who are the feds? And it's like, just because a woman's really into Bitcoin doesn't make her a fed.
Yeah. It's like in line with the anti-Swanitism as well.
Exactly. There was a lot of fed undertones in that one as well.
Yeah. I don't know why the feds would go after Swan as hard as they did. That was all very strange to me.
Right. I mean, they covered with Tether. I thought they would be okay.
Yeah. I would have figured they would have liked Swan in them using dollars to make Bitcoin stronger.
Right. Exactly. That gets into our final topic. It's like the strategic Bitcoin reserve. And the strategic, you know, Bitcoin reserve is, well, you know, we talked about this off air. We like to talk about Bitcoin fixes this. And sometimes we lose sight of Bitcoin's power to fix things. And we wouldn't have even considered that Bitcoin, well, you know, we say that Bitcoin fixes the fiat system, but we couldn't have considered how. And it seems like the strategic Bitcoin reserve is our Manhattan Project to finally fix the U.S. dollar fiat system.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I think this Christmas was definitely about the strategic Bitcoin reserve.
Yes, ultimately, it all boils down to that. I mean, the election itself, even though very few people had the vision to see it and call it out, people like the Bitcoin Bugle, first and foremost, Dennis Porter, of course, Mark Goodwin, even Audel Magoo. The Bitcoin Bugle was the most out front, other than Dennis Porter, about this. And that's what everything's been all about. And it's finally here.
Yeah. I think we're really gunning for, so InfoWars is, tomorrow's fake news today, right?
Right.
We're like tomorrow's real news today. You know what I mean? Like, this is just something like, I think journalists that are Bitcoiners are way ahead of the curve. You know what I mean? So like, you know, having been into Bitcoin for a while, we've been front running everyone. We've been front running the US government. We've been front running BlackRock. We've been front running, Mark Cuban. And when you're front running the entire world as a result of listening to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week, you're just kind of in the habit of front running. So you can front run everybody else when it comes to news. Like, I think a lot of these fiat type reporters is they just focus on clicks. They just focus on the headline. And when you're operating in the value for value economy, you're not as much worried about that. Like, you don't care about how many likes you get on Mister. You know what I mean? You care about how many zaps you get. There's a big difference there.
Right. People who are chasing likes and chasing retweets are going to be outcompeted by the people who are chasing zaps and boosts. That's why all Bitcoin podcasts will, or excuse me, all podcasts will slowly become Bitcoin podcasts, because it's more thermodynamically sound. A Bitcoin podcast is the only podcast eventually that people will realize it's the only podcast that's worth their time. And they'll demonstrate that by using the value for value economy for content.
Totally. On the strategic Bitcoin reserve? Because I know I am.
Absolutely. Back to the point you were making, it's seeing that the strategic Bitcoin reserve, it's not just enough to be the first person to make the announcement and get all the engagement on Twitter. It's being able to make accurate profitable decisions with the information. Being able to see and front run the strategic Bitcoin reserve, just like being able to see and front run the ETF. It is, the journalists who do that will have the ability to pay their taxes and continue to focus on journalism instead of how am I going to be able to pay my taxes? Do I have to learn to podcast now? Like, what am I going to do? You will be able to take
It's a feedback loop where, these journalists not on the Bitcoin standard are just so focused on like their impressions on Twitter, for example, because that determines.
You get the outpayments there.
Exactly.
You have to KYC, as long as you KYC and pay a fee, pay your private taxes to Elon Musk. And you get your fiat payments, probably going to come out in USDT soon. But, if you get paid in Bitcoin, you're getting better feedback about the value of your message.
Very well said.
I am extremely bullish about the strategic Bitcoin reserve. There's two camps here, I think, is where we're going to get into the debate. The strategic Bitcoin reserve is inevitable. It's going to fix. I think people are going to be surprised at how quickly it fixes the dollar system. I think that is going to be what Bitcoin's coming out moment really is like, holy shit, it fixed this broken mess. Like Humpty Dumpty, all the king's men couldn't put it back together, but Bitcoin fixed Humpty Dumpty. Like that, it's going to be a metaphorical Humpty Dumpty moment. We're going to get into the debate of, is the strategic Bitcoin reserve a strong central wallet, or is the Bitcoin strategic reserve create more security for the United States if it is the distributed as a decentralized, as many decentralized wallets and militias of people who are willing to defend it as possible.
Yeah. Well, I think the Trump administration with their new branch, the Dogecoin branch, is like they have a lot of foresight, right? They foresee Bitcoin fixing everything. Therefore, you know, it's like one of the chief jobs and roles of government is to create problems for themselves to fix, right? Like that's the point of government. And so when Bitcoin fixes all the problems that they're trying to create, and they just can't, they can't create problems that exceeds Bitcoin's ability to fix all the problems, they're just not going to have a job anymore. It's not going to make any sense to employ them.
Right. You think about it. The blueprint is right there for the government to use. MicroStrategy was no longer able to continue solving problems, just like the United States government's going to be. So how do they continue to stay relevant and grow and create more shareholder value? They just adopt the Bitcoin standard and it fixed their stock. And now the government's going to do the same thing with its treasuries, with its bonds, with its convertible notes.
Yeah, it's very exciting. One of the things I want to talk about, so like an important concept for people to understand is it's not enough for the U.S. government to own Bitcoin. Like everybody needs to set up their own strategic Bitcoin reserve for their businesses, for their families. I think one of the aspects that's really missing in regards to game theory that people are way too focused on the nation state. They're not as focused on the corporation, right, and the individual. And it's just part of the problem with all the collectivist thinking that happens in our society. But, you know, all over the world, there are people simultaneously dealing with the issue of struggling to pay their taxes. And they're all realizing at the same time that Bitcoin is the vehicle to do that. And so the buy power that we're seeing, while it's exciting to see MicroStrategy buy a bunch of Bitcoin, it's really exciting to see individuals everywhere starting to have hope that they're going to be able to afford to pay their taxes, sometimes for the first time in their entire lives.
Exactly. So a lot of different economists and Austrian economists have made the point throughout their history is that people need to have a stake in the system for the system to have the right incentives. And what Bitcoin allows, the strategic Bitcoin reserve, like first thing you have to do when you're looking at the decentralized ones that you're talking about is the individual level. You need a personal strategic Bitcoin reserve. And once you have a strategic Bitcoin reserve and you can afford your taxes, then you start to build a strategic Bitcoin reserve for your wife, for your family. And once your family has a strategic Bitcoin reserve and they can afford their taxes, then you go and you start a strategic Bitcoin reserve for your schools and for your churches and for your trade unions. And once they have Bitcoin strategic reserves and they can afford their taxes, then you go to like the county level and the city level. And it all starts with the individual. Like you don't have your own strategic Bitcoin reserve and you can't pay your taxes, you're disconnected from the system, the community, from your country, from your people, your region. And until you can reconnect and have that stake and be a tax-paying citizen, you can't fix the rest of the world. Bitcoin can't fix the rest of the world until it fixes the individual.
Totally. I mean, one of the things people need to understand, or maybe we should look at this is that, you know, what's our role as stewards of this planet? as individuals with agency, you know, is it to pay taxes at the end of the day? And I think that's what a lot of the discussion around the strategic Bitcoin reserve is. It's like there's a lot of people in Bitcoin that don't believe in paying taxes, right? And like I was describing the communists earlier, you know, they're in that point because they feel disenfranchised by the system. They've struggled to pay their taxes for a very long time. And so that's just
see
the world. And
it's makes me, when I am thinking about hiring somebody to work for me, if I'm, you know, a capitalist, or if I am a father vetting the boy that his daughter is brought home and wants to marry, or if I am evaluating the quality of my potential spouse, I want to see their UTXOs. I want to see how much they value this and how bought in they are to this system. You know, if they have consolidated UTXOs, just an excellent wallet setup using the right pay scripts. I mean, that's the ideal. But if they have no UTXO, they're just a scattered mess, and a disorganized scattered mess. They just totally betray. I mean, if you don't consolidate your UTXOs, you're going to struggle to pay your taxes. That's just as simple as that.
Totally. This is a question I wish we had asked Fundamentals. I don't think we asked him for standards on potential suitors for his daughters, which hardware wallet they use.
Yeah. Native SegWit versus Taproot. It's like, you know, these are important questions.
Yeah. They're important to think about, you know, in the plan ahead. I mean, like, hopefully, you know, what I would hope most parents, you know, feel for their kids is that they, you know, they've had, you know, potentially 18 or more years to impress their values on them and to teach them how to navigate life, that they can feel a level of confidence that whoever they're bringing home with them for Christmas is the correct person and that their child will make the correct decisions.
Yeah, like if my daughter is going to be married off to some guy, I want to know, in a time of crisis, in a high time preference emergency, can this guy afford priority block space to make a transaction to protect my baby girl?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is just like a meme I see, you know, very often propagating, which is that you shouldn't trust your children. You know what I mean? And it's a very, you know, kind of interesting way to look at things, because at one point in your life, you were a child.
Right.
And hopefully you made it. It almost feels like not trusting your kids at a certain point when they're, you know, adults and able to think for themselves. It's almost like not trusting yourself. You know what I mean?
Right. If you don't trust your kids, it's probably because you feel guilty that you didn't raise them right.
Yeah. And, you know, which I think, like, you know, happens a lot, because it's not like in our culture or our society, there's a lot of good examples of how to raise your kids. Like almost the entire CIA controlled media is against allowing your kids to smoke cigarettes. They want them inundated with public education, learning about communism, you know, all these things that are kind of,
yeah, you want everybody kind of hopes that they could log in and see their kids' internet history and see that and know that their son thinks when old and is hot. Yeah, I mean, like, but it's not everybody has that insight. Sometimes you have to trust that you raise them correctly to value a sound thermodynamic economic theory and to be attracted to that type of signal.
Totally. Yeah, I just think there's a lot of messaging that could seriously be improved on, because I feel like it's very disempowering. As a kid, have that level of distrust. Like, you know, I remember, like, this is a story from Christmas that was very powerful for me. So, like, one of my most memorable Christmases was when I was 6 years old. And when I was six, that was the first time my dad gave me a pack of Marlboro Reds. And, you know, it was a life-changing moment. It was a rite of passage in our family. And this is something I hear a lot of people talk about, you know, which is missing from, like, younger generations today, is they don't have the types of rites of passages that many, you know, other cultures in the past had. But in the Greaser family, you know, at some point when your parents feel like you're ready, you get your first pack of cigarettes for your birthday or for Christmas or, you know, whatever point they decide. And, you know, the expectation with that first pack is to smoke it all in one sitting, right? And, like, you know, some parents have used this on their kids as, like, a punishment. Like, I remember seeing an episode of King of the Hill. Not sure if you ever watched that show, but Hank makes Bobby smoke the whole pack in one sitting, and they treat it as if it's like some sort of punishment, which is, you know, very comical to me, because, you know, in our family, when you're a greaser, you know, there's like something inherent about you where, you know what I did after I smoked that pack? I asked my dad for another pack. And he looked at me with so much pride. And that's how you do it as a greaser. I think that's missing from our society. Like, people don't get those types of experiences with their parents, because, you know, instead they're kind of treated like they need to be, like, controlled, and there's this term of helicopter parenting that I think is very common for a lot of people. And it's like, that most parents freak out when their kids smoke cigarettes. You know what I mean?
Right, right. But it's about trust. And it also, if you're not a parent or you don't have a good relationship with your parents, you can liken it to when you orange pill somebody. If you are, and, you know, it's not always your fault, but if you have a lot of anxiety about the person you're orange pilling becoming a shitcoiner, it's probably because you feel guilty about not orange pilling them correctly and about not following, you know, doing. It's like being a parent is like orange pilling somebody in many ways.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, it's hard, and I know it's like a very nuanced topic. And I imagine there's like a lot of parents that, you know, because individuals are very different and they're unpredictable. Right? Like, there's parents that do everything right and their kids turn it into Dieter Bobs, right?
Right.
And there's parents that do everything wrong and they turn into Madoxes.
Right.
Like, it's not like there's like...
Or Dylan McClure.
Yeah, or Dylan McClure. They're working at Metaplanet, right. One of the best performing stocks in the world.
In Japan, top performing stock in Japan, the second biggest economy.
Yeah.
Or third biggest, second biggest stock market, excuse me. Yeah. Wow. I was going to say we should go into biz, but based on what I'm trying to get on my Fountain app and on the browser, it looks like there's something wrong with their relays and it's not loading the Fountain biz from last episode.
Let me try on my end. Yeah, they're not loading on my end either.
Well, so it's that's one of the problem looks like.
Oh wow, Noster doesn't work. What a surprise! It's like lightning.
If you integrate Nostr into your mobile app, just do so with the awareness that it's gonna work about as much as Primal does. So if you can stomach that.
Well, you know, when you're a content creator of any sort, there's all these unpredictable challenges or externalities that you're going to face. Like when you're on YouTube and that's your primary income source, is either sponsors or whatever, there is the potential that, or just like, sorry, not whatever, but ad revenue. You know, you're at the mercy of YouTube. Maybe the AI decides to ban you for some reason.
Right.
Or you're saying some HR unapproved language or ideas. When you're doing things with products like Nostr or Lightning, and you know, whether you're using one of these platforms that host it for you, like Fountain, or you're doing everything sovereignly and self-hosted, instead of just like arbitrarily getting banned, like you do on Twitter, you run into technical difficulties. And so you have to plan ahead. And this is one of the reasons why, as a content creator, you should always have a Bitcoin personal strategic reserve. It's because there's going to be days where you're running into technical difficulties and the product's not working and your income goes to zero. And you need to provide cigarettes to your family no matter what.
Exactly. Beautifully said.
Well, thank you for everybody who sent us Fountain Boost. Looks like Shadrach and We All Eat. Yeah, that's a bummer.
See if I could find it in the transit. Yeah.
I tried three different typewriters.
Yeah, that's depressing.
Well, you got any thoughts to wrap up?
No, I think enjoy the rest of your holiday season, your Christmas season, New Year's resolution. Maybe we'll cover New Year's resolutions next week.
Oh yeah, that's going to be a fun episode. I look forward to that. Well, thank you for tuning in to this edition of the Beagle Weekly, and we will catch you on the next one. Well, Rod found a workaround to read the Fountain Boost. So we're gonna
So you know, cypherpunks find a way. It is Saturday evening, probably really high traffic time for Bitcoiners to be scrolling and reading the comments on Fountain for Bitcoin podcasts. And so probably somebody says something super base and the CIA is trying to censor the live feed of relays. However, Cypherpunks know to check for segregated cache solutions. So we found some cached base that we got for the podcast. So I'll read the first one. It's from Q1111 Sats. Have a compliant Christmas. Hope there's a carton of non-KYC Marlboros waiting under the tree this year. Oh, there was.
Not just a single carton. Are you kidding me?
A pallet.
We're living on a Bitcoin standard. We're not dealing in cartons. We're dealing in cartons. That's for sure.
Hell yeah. Fill them up on the in the shipping containers. Like, that's my goal, to have a shipping container of Marlboro Reds under my tree for Christmas some year.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't heard this discussed yet, but having a tobacco plantation as a citadel would be a pretty slick setup, to say the least.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Next one is 500 sats from Fuge Lion 4. And your cache comment does not show any comments, just the boost. So thank you, Huge Lion, for that 500 sats. Merry Christmas. The next one, you probably have a good Nostr name, but user 12931825 says 150 sats and a bunch of lightning emojis. I wonder if that's pies.
Sounds like pies.
No. If that's you, pies, Merry Christmas, motherfucker. We got to get you on here. You got to do a Bugle interview soon. Get in touch. The next one, of course, we're right, Shadrach. He boosted 9,547 stats. Merry Christmas. Gift emoji, Christmas tree emoji, cigarette emoji, orange heart emoji. The next one's 2,500 sats from Gert, G-E-R-R-R-T, orange heart emoji. Merry Christmas, Gert. Next one is again 350 sats from user 4011337771. Resistance is futile. Comply. Some people feel that way.
Definitely not.
Christmas is not about compliance. It's about capitalism.
Like everybody's, you know, opinion on compliance. You should comply based on the merits of what you're asking to comply with, right?
Right.
If somebody's going to ask me to KYC my cigarette transactions, never.
If you want me to comply, show me the incentives, and I'll decide for myself.
Exactly. You need to understand the trade-offs of compliance versus non-compliance before you just make a blanket statement that resistance is futile.
Well said. 500 sats from Sawzale. I'd forgotten the innocent joys of childhood Christmas time since I became a compliant taxpayer. Feeling so fortunate, I listened to enough Bitcoin podcasts. I'm able to pay my taxes with enough left over for one gift under the tree for each child. That's what this is all about. That is, thank you for sharing that inspiring story, Sawzale. And you had enough left over to boost us 500 sats. Fucking cheers to 2024.
Hopefully they can use our Christmas gift trading strategy, Bitcoin price arbitrage, because then they might be able to afford more than just one gift per kid next year. But maybe those gifts are like, maybe you don't increase the quantity, but you increase the quality.
Right.
You know,
right, exactly. I mean, Bitcoin is deflationary. So you might have to, you know, adjust your value settings and how you value gifts, because in a deflationary money, you might get less expensive Christmas gifts every year in Bitcoin terms. And that doesn't mean that the gifts, if they are, you know, the gifts, doesn't mean the gifts are improving. Doesn't mean the gifts aren't valuable.
Definitely.
Well,
it's interesting when you price things too. In just like raw processing power, you know, so like,
right.
The efficiency on the computational power typewriters is constantly increasing. And so like the typewriter of the past doesn't compare to the typewriter of the present.
Isn't there a whole law for that? Like Moore's law, the efficiency of typewriters doubles every so many months.
Well, I mean, it's one of the reasons why you need a deflationary currency in the world we find ourselves in, where AI and just general computing is so prevalent, is because the technology itself is deflationary. If that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
They kind of work together in making everything cheaper. But that's kind of what technology is all about, right? It's about making things less expensive and easier over time.
Right.
Think about like the shift from matches to Zippos and lighting your cigarettes. The efficiency gain that came with that. Because you could be fiddling with your matches. It's a lot of time lost. You know, you'll have a finite amount of time to smoke cigarettes. You're only on this earth for so long. And so the invention of the Zippo actually allowed for people to smoke more cigarettes and enjoy life more and be more.
Yeah, consumption of cigarettes. We need to get that correlated with human flourishing again. It's like energy.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening. Like we said, we hope you had a Merry Christmas and a good holiday season with your families. And we hope that you are busy orange pilling family members and friends with this time away from work and the stress of having to earn money to pay taxes.
Yeah, and I hope you're making fun of your family members that can't afford to pay taxes because they haven't bought Bitcoin, because they should be made fun of.
Once that skeptical uncle, once he can't afford his taxes, he will be crawling back to you for podcast recommendations. So enjoy making fun of him, but get ready to give him good Bitcoin podcast listening advice when he comes back before the end of the next year.
Have fun getting your wages garnished by the IRS.
All right.
If you listen real closely, you can hear the drums in the distance calling you to dance like a puppet, to question your existence. Are you ready to die for men you don't believe, walking through hell and fire only to be deceived? The deaths of millions pre-planned, Iraq, Syria, Libya, Somalia, Sudan. Are you ready for the next one? They aren't about to stop. Nobody asked for this scale of death, but the bombs are being dropped. A manufactured crisis to start another war, finishing off Iran for the encore. I tried to be good and do what I was told, but I never agreed to fund your damn wars. Murdering millions in the name of lies, printing trillions as old glory flies. In the name of democracy, they conquer foreign lands on the wings of eagles. The empire will expand. When you look around, how can you consent? You may resist now, but what can you prevent? The media deception has rotted society's brains, distorted perceptions, trapped by chains. Didn't Al-Qaeda bomb New York? Now they are good guys doing the Lord's work. How can we believe anything we hear? Who are really the terrorists wielding fear? Loading the globe without getting stopped. The CIA won't be topped. Causing chaos and destruction, and dollarizing through corruption. I tried to be good and do what I was told, but I never agreed to fund your damn wars. Murdering millions in the name of lies, printing trillions as old glory flies. In the name of democracy, they conquer for on the wings of eagles, the empire will expand.